13-year-old Adam has made a lot of mistakes in his life, but this has to be the biggest. Thanks to a massive fight with his little brother Callum, the mysterious and magical computer algorithm Popularis Incrementum has exploded and accidentally transported them to a completely different dimension. One where they were never born and the internet doesn't exist, and neither does any of the technology they know and love. Will the brothers survive in this strange alterverse where everything is the same but different? Can they stop an evil villain from sabotaging their dad's world-changing technology when in this universe, their dad doesn't even know who they are? And most importantly of all, will they ever find a way back home? Adam Destroys the Internet is out now in paperback, available from your local Waterstones or online at Waterstones.
Hey, it's Dan, and this is Fun Kids Meets, the podcast where we meet amazing people. And this week, you can catch up with my chat with the incredible Catherine Haymans, the Royal Astronomer for Scotland. Very fancy title, a brilliant job, looking at the stars. We chat all about whether the moon could soon have its own time zone. And she told me what the actual time on the moon is now. And our final story this week, the White House over in America wants the space agency NASA to develop a new time zone for the moon called Coordinated Lunar Time, LTC. Let's find out more with Catherine Haymans, the Astronomer Royal for Scotland with the Royal Observatory Edinburgh. Huge title, Catherine. We're so honoured to have you on. Just tell us, what time is the moon on now?
Well, there is no defined time for the moon at the moment. Different visitors who go to the moon, there are probes and astronauts. Well, there haven't been any astronauts for quite a while, but they usually use the same time as planet Earth. But there's this strange thing in our universe, which means that time doesn't tick at the same speed everywhere. Dan, have you seen the movie Lightyear? It's a Pixar movie with Buzz Lightyear in it, and he's marooned on a planet far away and they're trying to get home.
Yes, the Buzz Lightyear origin story. I've seen it.
You've seen it, great. Yeah. He goes in the rocket ship and he's testing different ways to get home. And each time he goes off on a test, it feels like he's only away for minutes. But when he comes back, everyone's aged and they keep getting older and older during the movie. I'm going to give away the punchline for people who haven't seen it. And he hardly ages. And that's not science fiction. They didn't make that up for the movie. That would be what actually happened, because time is not absolute, which is a really strange thing. It changes depending on how fast you're moving and where you are in the universe, which is really weird to get your head around, but that's a sort of just a fundamental fact of how physics and the universe works.
Now, I could understand, Catherine, how that would affect us and we see the impacts because we would age at a different rate, but there aren't regularly humans on the moon. How do we know that time is going at a different pace there if we're not really there to be able to see the effects?
Yeah, no, that's a really good question, Dan. So this is a sort of a theoretical prediction from physics. All the tests that we've done show that it would be true. In the Buzz Lightyear movie, it's quite exaggerated. And actually, the time difference on the moon is hardly any different from Earth. If you took a clock from Earth and you took it up to the moon and you waited 50 years, then that clock would be running just 1 second faster. So, or we can put it in terms of identical twins. If you've got identical twins and one goes and lives on the moon for 50 years, then that twin will be 1 second older than the twin on Earth. So it's a very, very small time difference, but it's enough to cause real problems for space travel and space exploration. And NASA's got this grand plan to get astronauts back on the moon again, which I'm really excited about. By the end of 2026, so that's 2 years' time, there are going to be humans walking around on the moon again. The first woman will be landing on the moon, the first person of colour. It's going to be very exciting. And there's lots of different countries wanting to get to the moon and future plans for when your listeners are grown up. The plan is that there will be people living on the moon. And so these very small time differences are going to matter, which is why we need to define what the time is on the moon.
You say it's 1 second for every 50 years, which You say it's also important. Now, that's over such a long time scale that it's hard to really understand how that could have an impact. Why do NASA think this is worth doing? What could go wrong if we don't account for that second?
Yeah, so you'd be surprised how important it is to know the time extremely accurately. So this is particularly if you're traveling sort of through space, maybe you're in an orbit going around the moon. So the plan is that there'll be a lunar orbiter going around the moon, which the astronauts live on, and they go up and down to do their exploration on the moon. That's the plan. So Dan, if you and I were going to meet for coffee, we'd maybe say we'll meet at the coffee bar at 2 o'clock. And if I'm a bit late, that doesn't matter because the coffee bar's still there. But in space, it's very hard to define where you are if you don't know what the time is. So the way people define where they are is they send a signal to something that's stationary, like the coffee bar, and see how long it takes to come back. So the accurate time is incredibly important if you're in space. And if you've got different countries who are using different times, then there's the potential for all sorts of catastrophes to happen if we get lots of people up on the moon. And so that's why the White House wants this universal time to be defined. But here's something funny, Dan. The European Space Agency called for this over a year ago. So actually the White House is playing catch up here.
That's what I was going to ask now, because you say there are so many different countries and we all have an interest in the moon. So you've got NASA, the American Space Agency, the ESA are here in Europe. We saw India touch down on the moon last year. I know that countries like China and Japan are very interested. Russia have always got a foot in the game. Is it as simple as NASA being like, this is the time on the moon. We decree that it will go along perfectly with us over in America. Will there be a lot of discussions about actually what we're going to do?
I think there will be an awful lot of discussion. The European Space Agency started this discussion off last year with a big conference in the Netherlands. NASA was involved in that. So it will be decided internationally, and that there are various different ideas about how you could do it. We could define time on the moon similarly to how we define it on Earth, which is that we have atomic clocks all the way around the Earth, and the average time is taken from those clocks, and it's set by a place in France called the International Bureau of Weights and Measures. So it could be that a similar bureau appears on the moon that defines what the time is there based on the clocks that they have. But there are various different ideas, and it will be an international decision that's made. Usually when it comes to science and space, we're all very good at working together, even if at the rest of times we're not.
Well, because on the International Space Station, while that's still up there, they go off GMT, don't they? Which is what we have, the kind of standard time set here from the UK.
Yeah, that's right, Dan. So the International Space Station is close enough to Earth and the gravitational field of Earth to have very, very, very similar time to the Earth. So the reason why the moon is so different, even though it's only 1 second every 50 years, but it's because the gravity on the moon is much less. So it's become important only now that we've got this vision to get humans on the moon and beyond as well. NASA has grand plans to also launch human explorations on planet Mars.
Well, you say that, and let's not forget that humans first touched down or landed on the moon, stepped on the moon 65-ish years ago. And we've got this thing on the moon where we gain a second every 50 years. You've said that we want to go to Mars and that in 30, 40 years, we want humans to be living on the moon. How far in advance do agencies like NASA need to think now when we're planning space exploration? Do we have an idea what might happen in 100 years, where we want to be in 200 years?
Yeah, I mean, there are grand plans and great visions, but I think it depends on what we as humans want to see. It's actually a lot easier to have robots exploring space for us. It's a lot safer. It's a lot cheaper. So we've had robots landing down on comets recently and going to other planets. There's the Juno mission going to look at the moons around Jupiter. And for me, that's a much safer, cheaper way of exploring and to do the science that we want to do. But it's not as exciting. I want to go to Mars. Do you want to go to Mars, Dan? I think it'd be great.
I'd love to go to Mars, but I'd also like to get back, Catherine. And I know it takes an awful long time. In fact, this is slightly going off topic. One of the first persons I ever spoke to when I did this podcast was someone who had bought a one-way ticket to Mars. And he bought that ticket about 10 years ago and he's still not been. So I don't know.
No, there's a long way to go. So the recent launch at SpaceX of their Super Heavy rocket with their Starship on the top, that is a major step forward to this long-term vision. It's the fastest rocket on Earth. It was its third test flight. It had blown up on the first two. And this third test flight, it wasn't completely successful, but it was more or less 90% there successful. And so we're building that technology to be able to do this sort of space exploration. So the question is there the will to do it and to really go where no person has gone before?
We will have to wait and see. Catherine Haymans, thank you so much for joining us.
You're very welcome.
That was the brilliant Catherine Haymans, Astronomer Royal for Scotland. And remember, you can hear more brilliant interviews like that on the Fun Kids Science Weekly every Saturday on the free Fun Kids app. And you've been listening to Fun Kids Meets, the podcast where we meet amazing people.
13-year-old Adam has made a lot of mistakes in his life, but this has to be the biggest. Thanks to a massive fight with his little brother Callum, the mysterious and magical computer algorithm Popularis Incrementum has exploded and accidentally transported them to a completely different dimension. One where they were never born and the internet doesn't exist, and neither does any of the technology they know and love. Will the brothers survive in this strange alterverse where everything is the same but different? Can they stop an evil villain from sabotaging their dad's world-changing technology when in this universe, their dad doesn't even know who they are? And most importantly of all, will they ever find a way back home? Adam Destroys the Internet is out now in paperback, available from your local Waterstones or online at Waterstones.com.